Hi, I'm Steve Ladori.
And I'm Akiva Beebe.
Together, we'll be talking to leading innovation experts from across the world who are going to share how they've been keeping themselves busy during this time of disruption. That is, reinventing themselves, their teams, and their businesses at breakneck speed so that they can be ready for the new normal.
Today, I'm very excited that we are joined by an executive at Procter & Gamble, Carl Frake. Carl is an associate director at P&G. He's currently supply chain leader and lean innovation continuous improvement leader for a very exciting area known as Procter & Gamble Ventures. And Carl is going to talk to us all about that. Carl has an amazing 34 years of experience at P&G. He's held a number of leadership positions in areas including innovation, manufacturing and supply chain, business management, and capability improvement. And during this great career, he has traveled the world with P&G, spending 15 years outside the U.S., including China, Ukraine, and Singapore. So very diverse background. Currently, he's talking to us from his home in Cincinnati, Ohio, here in the U.S., working from home like just about all of us are during this coronavirus pandemic. So, Carl, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So as we talk today, we're in a world where whether you wanted to be disrupted or not, you have been disrupted. And we've talked a lot in our corporate entrepreneur community about how you lead during, you know, let's say relatively stress-free times, which in the world of innovation is, of course, never stress-free, a whole lot of things. But boy, things have really doubled down now in terms of what's going on with the pandemic. Could you give us just a brief overview, maybe even start with what exactly explaining what P&G Ventures is, and then maybe a brief overview of what you've had to do to pivot with your team in terms of how you've been operating during this and what's fundamentally changed and how you work and how your team's operating?
Sure. So Procter & Gamble Ventures is a standalone, very small business unit inside of Procter & Gamble that has the main team sitting in Cincinnati and a smaller team sitting in China. Our mission for Procter & Gamble is to create new categories for the company by creating new brands in areas where we currently do not compete. So in regards to the impact that the COVID-19 situation has had on us, first of all, it has taken all of our employees to starting in China, taking them home, taking them to work from home, taking them to obviously shelter in place types of restrictions. Our China team, as I'm sure you've been following in the press, has been limited for a number of months in regards to what kind of travel they can and can't do. And that has been continuing to evolve as the Chinese government and the Chinese society learns to much more of a track and trace with medical testing along the way. They have learned a lot, they have certainly demonstrated the benefits of a highly disciplined society can have on being able to deal with something like COVID-19 pretty dramatically control the outbreak by leveraging the society and the norms of what happened in that society. We have specific teams that are focused on dealing with a whole bunch of different areas. We have teams that are using what we call command center types of organization structure, working with our partners and our suppliers, working on matters such as logistics and transportation between countries, working on best practices for protecting our employees. As you can imagine, our employees in our factories and our distribution centers needed to continue to work throughout this.
Sure, yeah.
There's been a great deal of support for them. But it all really, at the end of the day, revolves around learning and really reapplying best practices no matter where they come from.
As you entered the pandemic, as you and your team entered the pandemic, because we'll ask you maybe in a second here if you can come up with some examples of projects you've been working on, but you had to have physically been disrupted. I mean, we in our corporate entrepreneur community, we have a number of members who are, let's call them digital companies, finance organizations, insurance organizations. So when everyone went to home, of course it was a hiccup and you had to really change what was going on. But in your case, you've got physicality, you've got supply chain, you've got this. What happened initially as you entered the pandemic, given that you're a global organization, you were sourcing things globally?
So Procter & Gamble has a approach to the recognition that there are going to be things that happen that we call business continuity planning. And we do that across our supply chains. We do that related to our organization and people systems. And we do that related to our IT infrastructure. And so the key to dealing with any kind of a disaster, if you will, is to have those plans ready, understand what elements of the organization are going to lead those plans, and get on with it. And so kind of at a 10,000 meter level, that's the overarching answer to your question.
How did you have to adjust when you have a very, I'm not sure if highly regulated is the right term, and that your industry is regulated, many industries in, but P&G is known for its matrix and its global matrix, and some would say command and control. Did that help you or hurt you during this situation? And maybe from there, Akiva, we can get into maybe some leadership and skills and things that have been demonstrated. But Carl, was the organization DNA, if you would, a help or a hindrance? You kind of touched on it with some of these command center comments.
Yeah. So the traditional matrix structure of Procter & Gamble evolved. It continues to evolve, but there was a fairly significant evolution a couple of years ago where our markets were provided with a significant change in the amount of local control that they have of working with consumers, tailoring programs really related to our customer channels and our consumer needs in their particular markets. And if you think about the business continuity planning and dealing with COVID, it was really mm-hmm. best of both worlds approach that was executed, where you have the strong capabilities and experience of something like our global product supply organization. But then within the individual markets, the government requirements, regulations, ability to move around, all of those kinds of things, and therefore collaborating with local stakeholders, it was very important that collaboration and influence with local stakeholders took place. And with the evolution of our structure from a couple of years ago, that I think went pretty smoothly. And as I had said previously, those learnings through forums that mm-hmm. are happening literally in a lot of cases every morning, those forums are continuing to update the balance of the organization around what's working here, what's working there, to help people in other markets, other regions, be able to take those lessons and apply them in their market.
So it's not at all surprising that you kind of had that backbone. But it's great to hear about how you're adopting and learning literally daily in local environments and all different in different places. I mean, the press, I don't need to tell you, has been filled with stories of organizations who, were not prepared and have been totally blindsided. Not that P&G or any of us weren't blindsided by the pandemic, but the fact that you have the org structure and the backbone in place to be able to deal with it is quite commendable. Akiva, let me pass it over to you.
Yeah, and Carl, I mean, what we're kind of really curious about as well is just, how when you talk about that structure, it almost sounds like you structured to to be very flexible, right? Which is kind of quite a contradiction. And we, you know, for a lot of the listeners out there, you know, some of them have these massive organizations, and their inability to really respond quickly to these radical changes and fast-moving environment is a massive struggle. So we'd love to hear more about how you work it out, like what are the kind of capabilities you're finding help you really maneuver and be much more responsive in this market? Like, what does that look like, these new ways of working?
Right. So in regards to, I'll talk a couple of things here. I'll talk about as that relates to internal operations, and then maybe I'll talk a little bit about how that relates to moving forward with innovation. First of all, related to internal infrastructure, it really does come back to having a knowledge and a having networks in place where the relationships are already built, right? We have across literally all of our functions and as applicable, wherever common tasks are being accomplished, we have global networks and regional networks. And because those networks already exist, the IT and other communication infrastructure is already in place for those networks, and the relationships are already built within those networks, it's extremely easy for those networks to be able to pivot away from the normal continual improvement role that those networks play or governance role that those networks play to dealing with a crisis. The trust is already there. Of course, we all know that that is so incredibly important to to speed and agility. And so the fact that those networks are forever, they don't just come up in the time of crisis. Those networks exist in an underlying purpose of continual improvement. You get that benefit of being able to pivot them, as I'd said. And so that's this balance between the power of this large global multi-discipline, multi-business unit company and being able to understand those best practices, but at the same time, the freedom and capability, don't forget the capability has to be there, but you know, making sure that we have very capable leaders running those local organizations and the right infrastructure of engaging the local communities, local stakeholders, so that they can tailor the best practices to what is needed in their particular geography. Moving on then to innovation. I think it's very much a common theme that the tools that exist with collaboration tools like Zoom that we're using here today, but all of the other collaboration tools that exist, for example, Microsoft Teams, just as another example, where you can securely and privately at a one-to-one basis, or if you're doing something, in regards to a highly confidential project or conversation, all the way to maybe using another tool like WebEx at the enterprise level, where you really want to have a town hall, for example, and have it moderated and, you know, be able to raise your hand and all those kinds of good things. You have this whole range of ways to be able to engage regardless of location, regardless of time zone, because of the fact that, all those infrastructures are now in place. And particularly, I think the biggest learning that I've seen here is if you consider consumers and customers, you know, being channel retailers, for example, and the individual consumer, and then our supplier partners, our innovation partners, our ability to engage them in the way that we're engaging each other right now and leveraging video, you know, really being able to look at the consumer's house. We have consumers who we're finding are very comfortable taking their iPhone or whatever device it is and walking around their house and showing us things that we used to feel it was important for us to have to go to their home. They're showing us their house. You know, that
wow,
would be
that's
one
incredible.
Example of a surprise for us.
And that's interesting, Carl, because that elicits that point you made around trust. I mean, how did you manage to elicit that level of trust where they're willing to let you into their home?
I think trust, first of all, starts with extremely consistent values and how you consistently communicate those values. And for example, in the space of talking about collaboration, you know, the personal privacy is something that, individuals take extremely seriously, regardless of where you are in the world. And our company takes that incredibly seriously. We do a lot of training with our employees that are involved in collaborating with individual consumers about what their consumers' rights are, you know, what legislation is. And we make sure that our IT tech stack infrastructure is all in line with following that. And we talk to our consumers about that. We talk to and we communicate that on our websites. And so because our consumers know we're very serious about that, that is kind of that first level of trust. And then the second level of trust really comes down to, you know, how do we engage them in conversation? How do we engage them using other digital media in regards to really listening to them? And if we say to them, we're going to follow up with you, following up with them.
And I guess that brings us into the point around the sort of the new leadership characteristics you've seen emerging in your enterprise. To be able to put you in that position of such good trust and being able to pivot and partner and collaborate, like what does that look like for a lot of organizations are trying to work out what this new leadership currency is that they need to lead the organization to where you're at?
Yeah, I've been extremely impressed with our senior leadership, our business leadership in this regard. Obviously, our company makes an incredible amount of investment in leadership. And there is a high expectation with our senior leadership that they role model the desired behavior. And I think they just do an outstanding job with that. What I think is really critical that they've done a great job demonstrating is, first of all, adaptability. They have demonstrated a real empathy. You can absolutely feel every day that it's genuine, and the fact that they have the humility to really talk about what's going on in their life, what's going on with their families, what's going on with their personal schedule, what's working and not working. And so because of that empathy and because of that humility, I think it really makes the organization that much more interested to listen to what they have to say. And then I would say, last but not least, our senior leaders and again our local leaders have an extremely high expectation of themselves and of each other related to being lifetime learners. And because of that expectation, questions are being asked for the true purpose of seeking to understand versus where you may know of some examples where questions are being asked more or less to check boxes or maybe even for someone to listen to themselves talk. That I can very proudly say is not what's going on in my experience. It's really seeking to understand to make a difference.
Right. I mean, I'm kind of hearing that they seem to be quite open with not knowing what's going on and really learning new things. Is that correct?
I think that that's true. Again, to the humility and making themselves available. Maybe I could say emotionally available for that kind of a conversation. To be open and to be able to say, I don't know. I need you to teach me. What did that mean? Some of the things that are signals for me that you really do have a leader who's open to learning. However. Clearly, the purpose of conversations that senior leadership is having with the organization is about solving a problem. And so the questions are very much part of a journey to gain learning for the purpose of solving a problem.
I think that's a great takeaway for our listeners. I seem to recall there's some story you talked about of it was a team of your employees or startups. I'm not sure that you were partnering with them, but something about getting PPE ready or something like that. Does that ring a bell? Story of helping some people rapidly develop some new products.
So I'll just tell you, there's a lot of stories out there, but I'll tell you one that some of the engineers in my organization actually were involved with. There is a retired researcher of Procter & Gamble who's been working just by coincidence on a portable ventilator. And when it became very clear that ventilators were something that were going to really be urgently needed, also the recognition that they were going to be urgently needed in developing countries and out in the countryside, this person approached our chief technology officer and our chief innovation officer and asked if he had an idea. This is Kathy Fish. Asked if she had any ideas on how to accelerate things. And just to make a long story short, she made resources within P&G available temporarily to help this startup get into the development of the ventilator from being an MVP to actually having design elements that would have the ventilator ready for scale. And and this took place in a matter of weeks. And our company has a very clear knowledge at a corporate level of some specific unique skills that some of our engineers and scientists have. And so, you know, when they first got together, they identified, okay, these are the specific areas that need to be addressed to be able to move this MVP into something that could go into scaled production. What are the specific skills that are needed to be able to solve those problems? And they went out and found those resources. Fortunately, literally all of them were available in the Cincinnati area. And as you can imagine, there was absolutely no conversation. Not only did the people who had those skills engage, but it was a great honor for them and opportunity of a lifetime, if you would, to be able to contribute to something that had the potential to be such a benefit to society.
What changes do you see coming out for your organization that you think might be beneficial for others to be thinking about, you know, how in terms of how you're going to operate post pandemic and changes that you think are going to be sticking or changes that will come in terms of how you operate going forward?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of learning that's taking place related to the digital opportunities as it relates to the digital side, which I'm sure you're hearing about through others as well, is just the question of where is work? And what, you know, is when do you really need to be physically with other people? And then related to that, what impact does this have on recruiting? And does this potentially change where some of our employees are located? If we need a specific skill set that we can't find within our metropolitan area, I think we felt really constrained by that and felt like we had to physically have the person relocate. After this experience, I think we're going to rethink that.
The question Steve and I have been thinking about is what are those future skills that are really hot in demand that you're seeing now as you're thinking about recruiting and pivoting that all of us should be really considering and thinking through?
So I think adaptability is the first one I would mention, and that is around being open to win-win scenarios. For example, back to the location thing, somebody may be bound to a mortgage, and so incredibly difficult to leave some metropolitan area, and so they might need to work a different set of hours to be able to maintain their current location. They may have to travel away from home a week, a month, but it generates a win-win, and it really creates a good possibility for connection between a skill set and the needs that an individual organization has. Obviously, knowing how to use and leverage collaboration tools, and not just knowing how to do that, but really knowing it at a level that adds a different level of value to your organization. So you're constantly out there testing new tools, testing new approaches, and then bringing those to your organization as opportunity for productivity or collaboration engagement, so that you're really adding value in a new way versus, okay, I know how to do a certain kind of a test method in the laboratory. Maybe that was the real benefit 5 years ago. But now I really have a new method to be able to engage a consumer in the Czech Republic and not needing to travel to the Czech Republic. That could really be the, you know, the next generation of a capability that an organization really values. And then last but not least, I would say self-management and self-discipline is going to become much more important as the lines of where the work location is become more blurred. You're not going to have direct management. The time when you're working, when you're not working, will probably be more under the employee's control. And so that employee is going to have a lot of discipline on how they manage their work-life balance, and also a lot of discipline on getting the work done without somebody looking over their shoulder.
Let me take a shot at trying to wrap up with what I heard that maybe we can share with our listeners as takeaways for them. First, I mean, just the fact that P&G is global, regional, and local and has infrastructure already set up and operating processes is really, really sounds to me like you've been able to leverage it to help manage through this crisis. I think you said something to the fact that you're learning and you're learning every day and disseminating that learning across the organization, locally, regionally, and globally every day. So I think that's really, really a fantastic takeaway. Behind that, which I hadn't really thought about, but what made it possible is you said you leveraged all the things that you had built up. I had talked about P&G being famous as a matrix organization, but extremely well run at the same time. You said you took the trust that was built up and the procedures built up during, quote, normal operating times, like continuous improvement and things like that, and was able to pivot into a crisis mode to be able to leverage them during this time, which has clearly served you folks very, very well. Perhaps the biggest takeaway that I got was new types of leadership, and maybe not completely new, but certainly evolving. Hearing about leaders who are learning, empathetic leaders, leaders who are supporting individuals all over the globe. The story you mentioned about a retired engineer who literally, you know, called in one day and said, "Hey, I think I can help," and your organization made the resources available. I think we're seeing more and more examples of people taking initiative to be, I guess what some of us call a learning leader, showing humility, showing that we're all in this together are really, really valuable skills going forward. And then maybe to kind of build on that, I'm thinking that I have not heard the term "where is work." I think that's a fascinating and very, very relevant new term. And you coupled that with adaptability of employees, you're going to need to have new skills. You're going to need to use all these digital skills, which are available and which do make a lot of this possible to do. And I think the idea of, you know, where is work also then brings in pieces of when is work. You know, you mentioned like, you know, maybe you're going to travel 1 week a month, but then the rest of the time you're going to work out of your home. It's really something that can scale organizations in completely different ways. And I think make you very, very flexible, adaptable, and hopefully very successful for the years going forward. The fact that consumers are getting more digitally and socially aware and letting themselves become more involved. I mean, the idea of you visiting a home by having a consumer volunteer like, you know, hey, I'll show you exactly how I'm using this product. Yeah, I don't think would have happened even a couple of years ago, but now it sounds like people are happy to do it. And heck, you know, Lean Startup and all we've been talking about in terms of, you know, trusting and agility and sharing in the corporate entrepreneur community just, you know, continues to be, I think, just a great vehicle for all of us. So thank you. Thank you again for everything here. We will wrap it up now. I'd like to remind anyone listening that you can find this or forward it at bit.ly/disrupted today, bit.ly/disrupted today. We hope that you will share this. And Carl, thank you very, very much for taking time with us. Akiba, thank you for your input as well.
So come join the movement. Find us at bit.ly/disrupted today.